Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booker County in mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our guest this week is author of The Genesis Race, Will Hart from GenesisRace.com. He has a series of books dedicated to uncovering our cosmic ancestry, delving into history's mysteries and the truth about UFOs. And his first book is published by Inner Traditions and is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other bookstores. And he has good, solid scientific evidence to back up the theory of directed panspermia, which was proposed by Sir Francis Crick, the co-founder of the structure of DNA. So without any further ado, welcome back to the show. Good to have you back.
Well, Jim, thanks for having me back.
Anytime.
I look forward to conversation.
Anytime.
And I think we had a good one before.
We sure did. So what have you been up to? What do you know that's good?
Well, life, I think, is positive no matter what. I know there's a lot of concern and grief on the planet right now with the disaster that happened in India and in that whole region. And I want to address that in reference to the 2012 Mayan prophecy and actually expand on that. When I look at what people call the 2012, and there's a lot of confusion about, well, what does this mean? Is this the end of the world? just exactly what is it? What did the Mayan have in mind? And I've been, just to go back a little bit and introduce how I got involved in this, in the mid-70s I became really interested in the whole Mesoamerican and the whole Native American throughout the Americas, the history, and we were trying to piece together what the history was. And I decided to go down and spend a year in Mexico and Central America traveling to the archaeological sites. In retrospect, I'm not so sure I would have done it that intensely had I known things about those power sites that I know now. But I did do that, and I spent time with two different tribes, one, the Lacandon, down in the Lacandon rainforest in extreme southern Mexico on the border of Guatemala. And they're considered to be the timekeepers, and then another tribe down the Lake Atitlan. And I just became completely engrossed in trying to understand the Mayan calendar, where the 2012 prophecy comes from, and spent ever since then, really. And to be honest, largely a very frustrating experience, because people, including myself, researchers, are coming at it from the wrong ways, and I think it was just that the time wasn't quite right for the pieces to fit together. Because I had kind of the attitude and approach that other investigators did, which was, this has some, you know, spiritual, which of course it does, or metaphysical or esoteric meaning to it. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago I realized, wait a minute, maybe these solar priests were talking about the physical sun and cycles going on within the sun itself, and not some spiritual, superphysical fate that was going to transform humanity. So when I start, you know, using that logic and those lines of research, it started really fitting into place. You know, because what you find, what I came to realize, and only a couple of years ago I came to realize that I'd already done sunspot research to a degree, but I hadn't tied in the 2012 date, which is the next solar maximum, with the Mayan prophecy, and linking that together with catastrophic events, the war cycle, and so on. And I don't know how familiar you are with that. Some people are and some aren't.
Well, let me interject something.
Yeah.
When you hit on this thing about the sun, see, back in March of 1998, the Creator, just my dream voice, is, you know, as some people call it, that's what, I don't know if you had a chance to read Winfrey's book about David Wilcock, but that's what he called it, his dream voice, till he identified it as Ra. But anyway, a dream voice that later in that year identified itself as I Am, told me in March of 98, he woke me up early in the morning, and the voice said, and I don't want to call it a he, because every time I hear it, it always has, it sounds male talking to me, but as it stops talking to me, I hear a female behind it. So, but anyway, the voice just said that in the future, 2005 will be known as the year of great havoc, because the weather will become so bad that it may even shut down most of the computers on the planet, all except for the highest speed computers. And then the voice raised itself and says, and wake up and write that down. So I woke up, wrote it down. It's been on one of my websites ever since.
Well, I understand exactly what you're saying.
But in the last year, a year ago, when all this stuff started happening with the sun, I started thinking, man, this has got to do with the physical sun. And then about 5 months ago, I read an article that said that everybody that now gets weather, you know, the weather reporting or meteorological agencies, they, along with weather reports they send out to all the media outlets, they also send what's going on with the sun. So I went, that's it.
Right. And that is it. And the way you get, way you're talking about, the, at least one of the ways you get information, of course, there's a lot of ways we get it, but I started, several years ago, as I was doing this, I started to realize that I was in contact with something that was guiding me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people call this channeling. It's, I can't give it a name or personify it in any way. But I started to get led to information that, you know, directly related to questions and lines of research I was on.
See, I can't.
And you start to realize that, wait a minute,
I can't channel it, because channeling to me indicates it's something that you can call up at will. I never know when this thing's gonna wake me up.
Exactly.
Two, three, five, six times a year, it just comes when it comes. So go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's good, because to try to communicate that, operating in that way is kind of difficult to people who are kind of in the, you know, in the local linear kind of time, you know, and just dealing with objects and so on. It is a different way to function. And I found that in trying to understand this, I was pushing myself really hard, and then all of a sudden, about 2 years ago, the things started to come. I mean, it just started to come together, and when I looked deeper into the sunspot cycle, I realized, of course, 2012, that's the solar maximum. And then I went, now wait a minute, if it's all about the physical sun and it's all about some cycle in the sun, there's got to be connections to some kind of cycle, you know, that where you can see that it's really going through a cycle, that the sun has really changed. And then, so I went back and did research into the sunspot cycle directly, and other researchers, so scientists have looked into this and found that human aggression, the peaks of human intensity go right along with the sunspot cycle. Wars, First, Second World War, Korean War, Vietnam, they all peaked right when the sunspot cycle peaked.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started, in the last year and a half or so, I said, okay, well, that links together with 2012. And we just, now, what is this? Now, the Mayan have a fixation on the planet Venus. I mean, a complete obsession with the planet Venus. It had its own separate calendar. All over the Mayan archaeological sites, you find representations of the planet Venus, the god Kukulkan to the Maya, called Quetzalcoatl to the Aztecs, with the feathered serpent, was also associated with Venus. And that's puzzled researchers, Mayanists, you know, back through generations. Why? Why Venus? What's the big deal with Venus? Well, they had something at the beginning of their calendar system, which started about 5,100, a little less than 20 years ago. It was supposed to have started on 3013 BC. That's the date. And then they had a long count calendar. And they said that it was started on something they called the passage of Venus. Well, nobody figured that out. And then it just hit me last year, the transit of Venus. Of course, which we just had in June.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when I looked at the transit of Venus, and then I thought, okay, then there's got to be events in history. So I went back in history, pulled up, because the transits don't happen very often. The previous one happened in 1874, 1882. It happens 8 years apart. It happens twice in an eight-year period. And the previous one to that was 1760s, and the previous one to that was the 1630s. So I went to each of those segments, and I looked at events that happened. And I carried it back to 1518, 1519. And then things really started to click, Bluewater. I mean, because the big mystery in history was, how did Cortez land in Mexico and go and defeat the Aztecs, who were a very militaristic, really successful empire, and Cortez had a scraggly 300 conquistadors with him.
Uh-huh.
Well, he did it because Montezuma and the priests were paralyzed.
Yep.
Paralyzed. Okay, so now you have, why were they paralyzed? Because 1518 was a transit of Venus. They were looking for bad things to happen, they were looking for the possibility that Quetzalcoatl was going to return, because he said he would return during that cycle. But see, now, you follow me?
Uh-huh.
Now we kind of get into a mystical sense of Venus, too. What does it mean? I mean, Quetzalcoatl came, this god, and he was supposedly white, and he was bearded, and he came in a ship, Now, he returns in a ship, but he manifests entirely differently. He returns at the exact time they anticipated.
Uh-huh.
They think that this is the good guy, right? But it's not.
Well, it's like, why did Captain Cook show up in the Hawaiian Islands during the Makahiki Festival when they were expecting a white-bearded god?
So the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Happened. Okay.
Something going on.
Yes. Now, so we have this... So when I looked at that transit, I said, well, okay, now if we look on a large... What happened in the last 500 years? That was sort of like the initial process of this global change that we're still in the midst of, where cultures, whole civilizations collided, whole peoples with different religions and different worldviews suddenly collided, and they weren't aware of each other because we lived in a different world. There wasn't communication, there wasn't travel. Now all of a sudden, and so for 500 years now, we've been in the throes of this transformation. Now I think, so I started to kind of look at this Venus cycle as, okay, when this Venus transit hits, it accelerates, it brings certain things to the surface in human nature with cultures on a planetary scale. It's a tough time. So I wrote an article for Atlantis Rising called The Portal, and because that's what I call it. When we're in 2004-2012, I consider a portal. We're inside of it now. In that article, I predicted that, first I showed that we've had an increase of natural disasters and a huge magnitude in the last 40 years. I mean, it's just, the increase is so obvious that I'm convinced now that geologists are hiding it.
Because sure they are.
Really, really concerned. And what I'm saying is, we've had this, what we just experienced 8 days ago, that was the third 9.0
mm-hmm.
earthquake event that's ever happened
mm-hmm.
that we know of. And it's had, now three of them have happened in 40 years. The first one happened in 1960 in Chile. The second one happened in Alaska. Now they've experienced the third one.
And I've been waiting for that one in Indian Ocean because years ago, in about 83, I read a book by Rene Norbergen called Nostradamus Predicts the End of the World. And it really was a misnomer because it was really a prediction of World War III. But the kickoff for it would be something that would happen in the Indian Ocean that would inundate that area, which would allow China to build, because India would be so busy with recovery efforts that it would allow China to, and this is back in 83, remember, Nostradamus, this is Norbergen interpreting Nostradamus as saying that the Arabs would link up with the Chinese, and we know that happened, and that they would eventually, once this disaster happened and once India was out of the way, because the biggest democracy in the world is 800 million people in India. The only thing standing between the Western world and China, as far as militarily, is India and Pakistan. Well, you know, if something worse even happens, and Ed Dames just said that we're going to have another one of these in March. So I'm thinking, and I'm going to be talking with John Hogue Friday, I'm going to be quizzing him about this, because what Nostradamus said was that he saw a round mountain rolling over and over. He said this thing would be about a half a mile in diameter, and something about the middle of the Indian Ocean, and this is pretty, you know, where this happens, pretty close. And Dame says that the next one's going to be in the northwest corner of New Guinea, and of course that will, you know, that will affect Japan and, you know, Korea. And
yeah, and let's not forget that we just went through a fall period, a typhoon and hurricane period, which was the worst in Japan's history, and Japan
right.
has a long history.
Well, see, the new year, to me, you know, when the spirit told me that, you know, 2000, as far as I was concerned, I was looking for 2005 to begin in September. It's the Jewish New Year, it's the Cherokee
right.
New Year, it's New Year for a lot of people. I wasn't disappointed. Well, you know, I wasn't glad that the hurricanes happened, but we got hit with bam, 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 the hurricanes. Then we got hit with this thing, and, you know, there's going to be more.
Oh, there's going to be a lot more, and that's...
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man's. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist, when I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position. conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you give, take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not gonna whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, there's if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
What I'm now trying to get out to people is, and I'm hoping, like in our conversation and whoever else might be out there who you reach, who I reach, is I think that I've rediscovered, and only rediscovered, I've invented nothing here. You know, I'm not coming up with anything on my own. But this is handed down from the ancient timekeepers, and the Maya definitely were. But our ancestors in general were. So were the Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all been lost now. But it can, for years, what I've been trying to do is I knew that if it's human, if it's in our sphere, we can reclaim it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We can bring it back.
Hopi prophecy and the Bible both predicted. Hopi prophecy said all the old Edmonic medicine societies that are now dead and buried would be reconstituted. The Bible, flip side of the coin, says that this would be the time of the restitution of all things, where all things that were spoken of by all the mouths of all the holy prophets would be restored. We're talking about knowledge here.
But here's where we get in, because you and I are, I don't know how, you know, I'm of the age where I've gone through this whole thing from the 60s till now, and there have been so many predictions and so many things that were, you know, the timing wasn't quite right, but people were laying the groundwork psychologically and spiritually for this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
What's hard now, though, is see some people have forgotten about it, have gone,
yep.
Oh, well, it didn't happen, it was supposed to happen, it didn't happen, then forget about it. Now you're hearing other prophecies and so on, right? And people are turning a deaf ear to it. Well, they don't realize, well, we're in it now. This is very serious. We are in it. And
yeah, you know, Art Bell or George Murray was talking about this the other day and about the Hopi elders coming on 7 or 8 years ago and having to be translated into English, but they still don't know, because nobody's told them yet, what I discovered a year ago May, was that I got to looking at what those elders said, and they said that 7 years from the time that Hale Bopp disappeared, they said that there would be a very bright comet in the sky, and that very shortly after that, the purifier would appear. And they said you might even need a telescope to see it, but that it would appear. And they said within 18 months of that time, then the purification would start. Well, I found out this is going back to May of 2002, I started investigating this in May of 2002, before I realized what was happening, and it was the third week of May, and I went, gee, you know, that was 7 years ago. And there's some, you know, it basically disappeared from the Northern Hemisphere during the first week of May, 6 years previous to May of 2002. So they're actually a little bit early. But about the 20th of that month, May of 2002, I discovered that a red dwarf star was discovered very close by to us. And it just, all of a sudden, just poof, appeared. And I found a picture of it. It was talked about on the NASA website. And that was only 2.5 weeks. And during that period of time, Comet Neat was in the sky. That was the brightest ever comet, and the elders have said bright comet followed by a red star. So I'm, oh my gosh, here we go. So
we're there now. I mean, that's
then we're forward 18 months. Where are we at?
We're there.
May, June, July, August, September, October, November of this year was 18 months forward from that.
Okay, what I've been given, and I've never made any predictions in any writings until this year. This starts us from now until 2012.
Mm-hmm.
We go through this accelerated period of
increasing
natural disasters. We're going to have a lot of social and political things coming that people are not seeing in this country at all right now. And it's going to get very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people are going to have to, I mean, the steadfast people are going to really have to dig in. I mean, spiritually from here on. Part of the problem is science has put out this global warming thing. That's not what I'm getting at all. Global warming is not what I'm... That's not what's going to happen. Because the solar... When the Mayans said solar shift, what we've had now, 2 months ago, I came across a study was released. They did an 11,000-year study of the sun. When they went back, they said the last 70 years, the sun has peaked in the solar intensity. It's not been as intense in 11,000 years. So what we're getting on the planet is this intensification of the sun. Now we're getting all the effects on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the earthquakes, increasing volcanoes. If you look back from 1900 to 1950, there were only a couple of volcanoes in the whole world. We've already had more eruptions just in the last few years than they have for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back 300 years, we've had more in the last 40 than in the previous 250 years.
Yellowstone was absolutely dead when I started visiting it back in the 80s. Just nothing was going on. But look at it now.
Exactly. And so this is scientific. I mean, we can look at it. You can look at it in terms of, you know, spiritually. You can look at it scientifically. Now, I think I'm concerned because scientists are hiding it. What they say is, no, there's no increase in earthquakes, but what they mean is there's no increase in the overall swarms of small earthquakes. There's a huge increase in the major events that you and I and other people care about.
Mm-hmm.
A huge increase. There never were any 9.0s. I mean, the San Francisco earthquake, which was such a big deal, was a 6.9.
Jeez.
We've had so many over 7 earthquakes in the last 40 years, it's incredible. Volcanic eruptions, very few in the previous 50, 100. You know, the Krakatoa erupted. Krakatoa erupted on a Venus transit, 1882. So what I'm saying, we're getting these things now, and you and I are on the same page with it. We're getting these things now. They're building up. The biggest concern to me, now we've already, here's the good part about it to me is, we've already seen 9.0 and 9.5 earthquakes, and they don't destroy the planet.
Mm-hmm.
They do some rearranging, and we're seeing massive devastation in India, but still, they are the earthquakes we can imagine. And they're not, so earthquakes are not going to wipe out the human race.
It just depends on where it happens.
If they hit Los Angeles,
yeah,
or anywhere in California, they're going to take our American economy down very quickly. And we've been very lucky so far that none of that kind of magnitude have, because they've been hitting them in Alaska, they've hit in relatively unpopulated areas. We're going to get one.
And the theory is that they're saying, oh, well, we're not going to get the big one because all these small ones is relieving the stress. Well,
no.
You know, the elders have said for a long time, well, you don't stop taking stuff out of the ground. Like, you know, you take the gold out, and that's what's discouraging lightning from striking the earth, because it's part of the body of Mother Earth. And they said, you know, you're going to be mining all this gold, and now they know that less lightning is... They still get the clouds down over the southwest, but they don't get the rain they used to, so they can't dry land farm anymore. And the coal, and I mean, who knows about oil, you know, if it really is what lubricates the plates, then what are we doing?
We don't know what we're doing.
No.
We've done a lot of destructive things, including, you know, causing different species to go extinct. It starts a chain reaction. I mean, we're in it. Mother Nature may just be in the process of correcting a lot of that. It won't take... We saw even with 9/11, it doesn't take a major urban event to make things unravel. I mean, emergency services can get taken down quick. They can get over...
And they were more concerned about the PR spin and keeping the economy going than anything.
Well, we're just going on debt right now.
Oh, yeah.
And as long as people have credit cards and the credit system works, we'll keep going. But, you know, the dollar's falling apart on world markets. I mean, you don't know what you really got until you try to go overseas, you know.
Well, what was it? There was $50 billion that the Fed pumped into, cash. And now the EU and China and Russia, basically there's a war going on against our currency.
Well, other countries don't have a lot of choice.
Yeah.
Because we keep sucking in the imports, and then eventually, you know, they're going to say, wait a minute, we're going to have to raise, you know.
And the Arab...
Lower the value of your dollar, because you're just going to keep going into debt. And debt, when are you going to get out of debt?
And there's rumors of a new Arab currency backed by gold. And Bishop Coyle, kind of a renegade Mormon prophet. He grew up with the president, Heber J. Grant, who was president of the Mormon Church longer than any president, you know, from turn of the century through World War II. But Heber Grant said publicly that he was no prophet, much less he couldn't even get an answer to a prayer. He said the heavens are like brass to me. On the other hand, Bishop Coyle was such an accomplished prophet that... I mean, everybody knew he was, and the largest movement, other than the church, the Mormon church itself, in the church had to do with the dream mine, and the idea that these Mormon prophecy talks about three Indian apostles that chose to stay here until Christ returned. Two of them came to Bishop Coyle and took him to a place in a mountain and said, this mountain is... there's a repository of golden records that won't be allowed to come out until the United States government fails. But he left a long list of weather signs that are also lining up. But don't even mean to get tangential. But he said the U.S. government would the slacks would get kicked out from underneath our economy. They would try to go on the gold standard, but it would be too late. And he said that the president would die in office and no one would want the job. They would look up and down the country trying to find someone to take the job, but no one would want it.
I think it's pretty clear already that the Democrats didn't want this. They don't want to run the government right now.
Yeah.
They did no logical campaign, as far as I could see. They didn't raise the issues that should have been raised. They didn't take positions be in opposition. Kerry ended up looking like, you know, a kind of a shadow of Bush.
It just looked like they were going through the motions, didn't it?
So we're in an odd situation. That's kind of, I don't know if we want to go, maybe I'd like to kind of stick with some of this disaster stuff.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, we can get to the social stuff, because it does fit into this.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Well, have you seen that, before you go on, have you seen that movie Smallpox yet?
No, I haven't.
It was. I'm not sure when it'll be on against, but it's a fictional. But it. I mean, it was kind of like War of the Worlds. If you started watching it 5 minutes after you started, you'd swear it was happening right now. But it shows what can happen if one idiot decides he's gonna want to kill himself, and you know, secret himself in a subway tunnel in New York City, and 60 million people could be dead within 3 months.
Yeah, we're in a lot of very situations like that, with nuclear and with so much of the stuff that's going on. I mean, just a lot of things are unthinkable, but they're actually quite possible.
Yep.
Like if an earthquake hits between San Diego and Los Angeles, you've got a nuclear reactor right on the coast.
Acclimate.
Exactly. So you're familiar with it.
Right.
I mean, we've got so much stuff like that that people just have been living in a bubble. I mean, a delusion about that nothing's going to happen on the planet. Lots of things are happening on the planet and have been. And fortunately, you know, there are forums like this and others where people who are doing serious independent research can come out and try to alert the public that, hey, this is going on. This is not something in the future. This wave of earthquakes we've been having since 1960, you know, are unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
The number of volcanic eruptions we've had since 1960 are unprecedented. And they've
Climate change is hard science now. I mean, it's I mean, even the reinsurers, which back up the insurance companies, they know about it. Vatican knows about it. NASA knows about it. The Pentagon knows about it. Everybody knows about it. But everybody's in this denial thing. Even the Bible says that in the last days there will be a great delusion, and there's a lot of deluded people.
Well, I guess, you know, partly the managers, right, what you're talking, all these institutions, the managers don't see any benefit to alerting the public.
No.
Right?
They see
no benefit to telling the public, because their whole game is to pretend they're in control. When all of these other forces are actually in control, they don't look good. Because, you know, then it's sort of like admitting, well, we're all vulnerable. We're all human. We're all in the unknown. We're all vulnerable. Hello. You know, so, and we learn that. I mean, we watch these people, you know, 150,000 people swept away by a big wave. And then you realize what many, many people, especially native peoples, have been saying now in the face of the civilization, that, you know, nature, in the end, we're nothing here. We're these tiny little creatures that can get swept away. And we need to get humbled. And apparently, I mean, isn't that part of the purification?
Yeah.
I mean, we have risen up to this godlike power as a civilization that is just untenable. You know, what is the point, though, of bringing out a predictive, an ancient science, a predictive science, and like you mentioned, like Christ said, actually, when you go through all of his prophecies, the last one that he gave that really, forget about all these other things that were supposed to happen, disease and war, rumors of wars and all this, he said, what precedes my coming is earthquakes happening in diverse places.
That's the
thing to really look for.
And didn't he say the seas will heave itself beyond its bounds?
Yeah, that may be in
there. I think so.
But definitely the natural disasters, the earthquakes are in there. And so what we're in determining exactly, and of course Christ always said, and native peoples have been doing it all along that I can see, is determine the season that you're in. Through the generations, right?
Right. Well, Jesus
determine
said,
what season you're in.
He said that when the fig tree leaves, he's speaking parably now, but he was saying, you know, when you see these signs, you'll know that it's coming to pass. He says, when the fig tree leaves, you know that summer is nigh. Well, you know, summer follows the natural progression, and so he was saying that all these things that are going to be happening are going to happen naturally. In other words, they're natural means cyclical.
That's right. The other thing, what I'm trying to bring to the fore now is this portal concept that the Venus transit of the bookends, and we're inside there now, sort of like a birth journey or a rebirth journey.
Mm-hmm.
We're in there now. I guess, you know, I have my own fantasies about maybe, you know, getting some kind of forum and getting out there. I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's only certain people who are going to go through this with awareness. Most people are not. They're not paying any attention. Everything is chaos to them. They don't see the natural order. You know, they just don't fit these things together.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
They're scared and they're going to be caught in a snare. The Bible says that, hey, keep something on the Bible, but it's a good source. Elders saying more or less the same thing. You know, if you fear you're going to be caught in a snare, well, how do you look at a tsunami and not be afraid? Well,
everybody is.
You look at you number one, you don't have to be afraid of tsunami if you don't live on the beach. Okay? If you don't have to be afraid of a tsunami, you know that the tide goes out like the fisherman, the Morgan, what do they call it? The Morgan, there were a group of fishermen that saved that village. They knew the signs. If you know the signs and how to live in harmony with nature, and you know if you've got your seeds ready, you know, like from seedsforsurvival.com, if you know how where your water is, like the Hopi told Chakosh Alho'o, you know your water. You know where do you live. What are your relationships like? Gave them 10 points, things to think about. You know, I live in harmony, and that you don't have to be so afraid. And that's what we're trying to do. You and I are trying to get people to not be afraid because being forewarned is forearmed.
That's right. That's it. And know the seed. Well, it's hard. Here's the problem is, and that's another thing. I guess we're going to go to the Bible to a certain extent. False prophets, false teachers come along.
Yep.
They give a wrong sense of timing. They, you know, they're way in advance or they're after things. They're not right in sync. So you have to be able to read the signs.
Native people say the same thing. There's always a good and a bad. There's duality. The eagle feather. They've got the black. You've got the white. So but I'll tell you one thing I've noticed. Is that you can always count on the counterfeit showing up before the real thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's fairly apparent from what...
Like
Y2K. Well, yeah, right. I mean, Edgar Cayce, you know, said that eventually people are going to figure out that we need to live the kind of communism that Jesus taught.
That's right.
Which is not legislated communism. So that whole thing with communism... was the ruse. So in the latter days, when great disasters happen, and people start saying, "Oh, we've got to build communal, we've got to get together and do an agricultural thing," and people are going to have such an aversion to that, they're going to say, "Oh, that's terrible. That never worked," and they won't listen. That's the way it always seems to work. There's always the counterfeit before you know the real thing shows up. And believe me, living all things common has got nothing to do with communism. It's
no.
different.
No.
And
Living in cooperation. Communism was statist, you know.
That's right.
It was a state sort of empire imposed upon people.
It was.
What we're talking about is a cooperative where individualism thrives and yet within a community.
Equality and a common ownership of land. It's everything that they took away from Native Americans in the 1890s, turn of the century. They felt like, well, you know, owning land as a tribe in common or in severally, I think it was a legal term for it. That doesn't work because that's not the way the law works. So, you know, they broke up. What they did was they enrolled the Indians. They allotted the lands, the tribe determined the farmers, and then they terminated the tribes.
Right.
Which basically just gutted the entire system that they lived under for, you know, 10 to 13,000 years.
Well, what we're living in is a make-believe democracy.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, people are going to hear that and they're going to get angry, you know, because we're supposedly, you know, this is the greatest thing. We have too much poverty. We have too much murder. We have too much violence. We have too many people who are working poor, who are working their butts off, but the economy is so rigged now with a few rich and money trickling, barely trickling down to people in the lower classes. And this whole thing of democracy, voting is such a huge deal, but we all know money controls who you vote for.
That's right.
So if money's corrupting this voting system and that's your big symbol of democracy, what have you really got?
They wouldn't allow anybody. They'll only allow you to hear two stories. I mean, the Libertarian candidate didn't get in. He got arrested. And they held him just, you know, when they tried to go to the debate. And, I mean, he had a large following. You know, there's other people other than, you know, the Democrats and Republicans that ought to be heard and have good ideas.
Well, Ralph Nader spoke the facts, spoke the truth.
Yeah.
He had no chance. And he has no chance because Democrats and Republicans are
yeah.
really in cahoots for a one-party system, and they just take turns.
Yeah, and I think the fact that wasn't he endorsed by the Communist Party? Which is not really good.
I'm not sure. You know, but he did speak a lot of truth when he was out.
Oh, sure.
Jumping around in
the Greens have got a lot of things going for him, but.
But you know this. I think we're going to see, and I use the Soviet. What happened to the Soviet Union as a prime example of. We kind of took it for granted when it happened, but when you look back at it, I really think that was kind of a harbinger of how this process is going to happen now.
Sure.
I mean, the Soviet Union just evaporated
yep.
because the people no longer could, there was no agreement. The agreement was terminated. And even the leadership knew people no longer agree with the contract. They're just walking away from
it. Oh, yeah. Well,
nothing left. There was no violence. There didn't have to be a revolution. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Would you agree that it's, I think people in mass operate like nature, where most of the time you'll look at the volcano and nothing's happening for hundreds of years,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden the ground starts quaking and it starts smoking.
Especially in Russia, because Russia is like a bear. The bear sleeps, and you know, a Russian general, I mean, you saw that movie The Saint with Val Kilmer?
Uh-huh.
Over, and it was all about cold fusion becoming a reality. Hey, that's the kind of thing. And when you watch smallpox, you'll see that this is how things happen. Basically, the politicians could care less as long as the people are kind of getting fed. And you know, the Russian generals don't really care as long as their jobs are okay and they're not going to get shot for crossing the wrong politician. But basically, the Russian people are like a sleeping bear. But man, when you don't even want to be in their way when they roll over.
Well, you know, even in the 60s, nobody foresaw that happening.
No.
Nobody in the 50s foresaw what happened in the 60s happening here.
And who knew?
I think human beings, we operate that way. We can be very placid for long periods of time. We can roll over with anything, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like enough is enough. This thing has gone far enough. We don't want to be lied to anymore. The trust is gone.
Yeah.
We've got to reconstitute the system. It just isn't working.
Well, the Secretary of State, the guy who's Secretary of State back in, you know, under Johnson and Nixon, I can't remember his name. You remember him. Sorry, Secretary of...
McNamara?
McNamara. He's got this TV show now called The Fog of War that everybody ought to watch because, you know, he said never in their fondest dreams did they ever think that the Russians were over there absolutely scared to death of us.
Oh, absolutely.
But we didn't know that. We had no idea what was going on over there. And he says the only thing that's averted nuclear war three or four times is blind, dumb luck. Well, I'll tell you what, Creator has let it be known that when a people become just so degraded,
right,
when they reach the halfway point where it's a balance, you know, or the people that are on a piece of chunk of land and holding themselves together as a government, when half of them aren't living right, then he will just walk away. And, you know, when McNamara said that, hey, we averted, we didn't have nuclear war three or four times by dumb luck, I went, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, the way we were back in the 60s and 70s, I mean, you know, look how far we've come, you know, morally since then.
Yeah, downhill.
Yeah, we're toast.
Now the frightening things and disturbing things in this country are it's just the total apathy. I mean, the lack of outrage. It doesn't matter anymore what happens. I don't care how many priests abuse children, how many corporate CEOs rip off, how many hundreds of millions of dollars. People are just immune to anything.
And the New Age movement promised to wake some people up. I mean, the whole thing kind of started with the hippies and you know, the long-standing prophecy was is that the grandchildren, great-grandchildren of the people that of the Custer people, you know, George Armstrong Custer,
it's
that those the Europeans, their grandchildren would begin to come and seek the wisdom, and that started happening in the 60s, and then all of a sudden you could almost name the people who co-opted the New Age movement. And kind of, I mean, to me, the New Age movement is nothing but a big travel agency now, where people are that's the big deal, is going to sacred sites and feeling good about yourself, and it just, you know, they don't seem to really be interested in what the native people have to say, you know, based on how much opportunity, because they had a tremendous opportunity to help this show, and basically most people that came to this site that were dying the wool New Agers said, ooh, they're too poor. I don't think I'm going to help them.
Exactly.
You know, oh, you're not manifesting. What? Yeah, of course we're not manifesting. What are we supposed to do? Create it out of thin air? You know? Oh, that's, you know, that's what
exactly
bankers do.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly what you're saying. Now, it makes for, I've had a lot of problems with those people. There's just a lot of delusion.
Yep.
A lot of delusional thinking. A lot of magical thinking, and by magical thinking, I don't mean in a positive way.
Yeah.
I mean that somebody's going to make this happen, but it sure isn't going to be me through any kind of sacrifice.
Right, right. You know, Christians are going through all the religions, whether it's New Age, whatever. Isaiah said at this time that all the tables would be full of vomit, that there wouldn't be a place that where the Messiah could put it, come to live, or lay his head. In other words, everything would be out of order.
But that, and then that's why we need this cleaning, right?
Right.
Things
got to be set in
order. Now, the thing about it is, all of, you know, when we talk about Native American, we talk about white people coming from Europe. But if we look back, and two different, very different kinds of civilizations, but if you look back 15, 20,000 years ago, we were all the same.
That's right.
We were chipping, you know,
flint, raising goats.
Yeah, you know, in Europe at that time, living in the Ice Age, trying to survive. You know what? And so, this thing, and there was an infusion of civilization. That's a whole different subject.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that had to do, we didn't create it. It was infused in different places on the planet,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't from native human beings.
No, it wasn't.
And that's what jacked up certain groups of people who then spread it around the planet. But we were kind of given this impetus to move this thing in a direction. The problem is it was too powerful for us.
Yeah, the Cherokee talk about the Ataga. They were a group of just spiritual missionaries, not religious particular, but they came to the planet about 50,000, 60,000 years ago. And The only place really that the teachings really stayed until recently were Peru, and now there's been a resurgence of the Asaga Siddhas. The Siddhas, those societies are very, very, very ancient, but they're clearly the wisdom had to have come off from off planet somewhere, because you know that's where we came from too. You know, we're
related to that. It's just that, you know, in the series of books that I'm doing, trying to prove that there's just no way that this evolution occurred on the Earth the way that our scientists are saying. Not our evolution in civilization, not even life on the planet.
Well, Darwin, even Darwin didn't believe, you know, at the end of his life what he had written about. I mean, it's the whole thing's really been put forward by a bunch of scientists, and doesn't really make sense. It makes, what I see is evolution. I don't know if you read the Urantia book or not.
Long time ago.
Yeah, basically what the Urantia book describes is a billion-year history of the Earth where there was a natural evolution that was punctuated every once in a while by an intervention.
That's what it looks like.
Right. And it wasn't enough to violate, you know, what the Star Trekkies would call the Prime Directive. You know, it was just enough to kind of encourage things along without taking away people's free agency.
Well, we got to look at what space is really like. I mean, space out there is deadly.
Okay.
It's absolutely deadly. I mean, there's, you know, cosmic rays, and there's just energies bombarding that are, you know, if the Earth didn't have this protective magnetic field, for one thing, the sun would just blast us away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so there's so much intelligence involved in keeping this thing finely tuned on the planet.
Well, you know, Hoagland was talking about, you know, that now they're finally starting to kind of figure out, well, they need to figure out how to rebalance the planet, you know, kind of like he was talking about that, and maybe not using those words. And I went, I said, oh my gosh, I said, isn't it too bad, I thought to myself, that when Thomas O. Mills sent his book in, describing that the Hopi elders said, that, well, what Thomas was taught was that the Creator's going to give us 8 tries to balance the planet, and after that, you know, we've done 4, we're going into number 5, and then Thomas discovered that, you know, the only symbols that were important to the Hopi religion were the only animal symbols on the pyramids on the Giza Plateau, and you know, he put it together. You know, what he's saying is that when Native people say we need to balance the planet, they really mean it, like a tire. And he said all these pyramids are basically built in the same latitudes, and he says the purpose of them was actually for physically balancing the planet, so when these big earthquakes happen, that we don't get the wobble, which, you know, could eventually cause the flips or the slowdowns, because slowdowns of the planet cause earthquakes.
Well, what you got is, the amazing thing is, and what I think partly proves that, you know, a superior intelligence that was already aware of the structure of the Earth, which, you know, human beings at the time weren't. That would, you know, Stone Age people weren't, of the geography of everything was, you go on the band around 30 degrees
right.
North latitude, and you have Giza, and you go east, and you have Sumeria, right? And the thing is, they're situated right at the mouth where the major rivers empty in to gulfs or the
right.
Mediterranean Sea. You come around, the mound builders, the same thing. That's 30 degrees, right? That's 30 degrees
right.
North latitude, right where the Mississippi empties in to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yep.
This is all the way around the planet.
Right.
That's where the major civilization. So you're right. They were well aware of that, and those rivers that are going north and south, that's the magnetic field too, is also traveling north and south.
Oh, see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better, I feel a lot better, and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Then you've got 19.5. Hoagland's big on 19.5 degrees, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard him talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
19.5, I haven't heard him mention that. When you look at that band, that's where, okay, major volcanoes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are on that band. In Mexico,
mm-hmm.
not only are there major volcanoes, that's Teotihuacan.
Right.
The City of the Gods is on 19.5. Major Mayan sites are on 19.5.
That's tropical cancer, right?
Well, when the hurricanes start over off the coast of Africa and they come across, they sweep across the 19.5 degrees, right? They turn north either at 20, when they get to 80 degrees, which is Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Right at 25 degrees there.
Longitude, 8 degrees longitude, right.
Is the Miami Circle.
Right?
I mean, it's right there.
Jeez.
Right where it turns, right where the energy turns up and heads north, you know, or it'll go all the way into the Gulf, and then it'll turn north to 30 degrees. And
tip of the Bermuda Triangle.
Exactly.
Right.
So, we're talking real energies. That's real, you know, the planet is generating these force fields. This is real energy.
Yeah.
That a higher intelligence was well aware of, and just like you said, they put these civilizations, these points there to balance these energies out. I think it went beyond that they created these sites and gave people a free energy system, which we lost. Tesla rediscovered it. He rediscovered how that worked.
The very first idea of ley lines came into Western thought in a book written by a man by the name of Pidgeon. It was a book called The Traditions of Decuda. And Pidgeon was over in the area up there around Cahokia and St. Louis, you know, just...
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, I know who you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, and this old man named Decuda, who said he was the last seer or prophet of the Elk Nation, which was it's a now extinct Algonquin race, starts telling him these stories. And back in 18, I got a copy of this book. Back in, I was lucky enough to get one that was ripped off of its cover, and because it's $300 to get one that's in good shape. I got one that was, the book was ripped out and it was recovered. I got it for about $50. But, and you can read this online. It's one of those old archive books. But back in the 1850s, I mean, the whole, it was, for a while, there was a very popular idea that it was that the mound builders were white, and then that's been laughed at. I mean, it's even laughed at up until fairly recent time. But I mean, people forget about the Phoenicians. They forget that there were all kinds of people that were here. I mean,
well, if you kind of go back to that, you know, to Casey's and you know to Atlantis and the fleeing refugees, and he had. The Atlantean people, who I think were mixed race. I think at that point in time, the races were, but they lived in different parts of Atlantis. They were spread out. And you have people, the Berbers and the Basques, who went to Europe and who have no relationship to the rest of the Europeans, the so-called Caucasians.
The Tuaregs?
Yeah, they have no their language is different, and yet a lot of them have blonde hair and blue eyes, and now when they mixed with Arabs, you know, a lot of them look like Arabs, but a lot of them just look like typical Europeans. But for a long time, scientists dismissed them. They just looked
at
them
like,
well, they're in North Africa. They must have come down from Europe. But those are indigenous people.
That's right.
Those are indigenous tribes to that area, right? Well, Casey, long before genetics or any of this stuff, said that you'll find the traces of Atlanteans in the Iroquois.
Yep.
In the Mayan and in the Yucatan.
Mm-hmm.
In the Berber in Morocco. And then in the Basques up in the Pyrenees.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those people speak language is unrelated to anybody else in the world.
That's right.
You know, so we're talking, and the mound builders, it's really unfortunate that people, you know, that white folks destroyed most of those mounds, because there was a lot there we could have learned from.
Yeah.
And that was a civilization, and people have characterized, you know, Native Americans as, you know, the whole thing is just focusing on the Plains Indians, you know, riding horses and hunting buffalo. It's a lot more complicated than that. And
this is not written history, but the oral history of the Kituah Society. The Kituah Society, you know, you gotta bear in mind, the Cherokee Nation is the largest Indian tribe in the world. There are 5 to 7 million Cherokee descendants. The Navajos are next. They've got about 250,000 people on the rolls. But the ethnologists, linguists, all these other people think that we are Iroquoian. Well, in 1540, DeSoto made a note that there were blonde-haired and red-haired Cherokee children running around in the streets.
Right.
The elders have taught that we were always mixed blood, that we live next to the Mayans, and you can see evidences of people that wore hats like Cherokees always did, similar to them, that had the inverted concave nose like the original Cherokee clan, the Kituah clan, also known as the Wild Potatoes clan, have that inverted ski jump nose. And we live side by side with them, and we traveled up here 1,500 years ago the second time. At the same time the Mayans did, because of the drought that happened. I mean, if they know now it was a drought, that's the reason why they had to come up here. So it's been established scientifically, but nobody knows about it because not much been written about it yet. But Dr. Tim Jones, the University of Arizona, has established that the Ozark Plateau was the jumping off place. It was the traditional home of the Cherokees, and we moved from here to the southwest. But what the Kituah Society, and these are the religious authorities, kind of like the Cherokee Church, if there was such a thing, they teach that when we came up, when we came back here the second time, because we originated on an island off the coast of South America that sank. We knew in advance it was going to sink because the elders were messing around with something called white fire, and only the Cherokees have anything to do with crystals. All the other Indians in North America are scared to death of crystals. We work with crystals, always have. We use them for scrying and predicting the future and invoking spirits and all
kinds. The Maya did use them.
Right, they did too.
Yeah.
I'm talking about North America.
Right.
But the Kituah elders say that when we got up here, that we began to move. As we moved east, we encountered the mound builders. That they were a tall white people, and that we fought a war with them, that we settled that war by agreeing to intermarry with them. Okay, so that's probably where...
That's pretty typical of the way people...
Okay.
Right?
And then, and so...
Because you establish long-term bonds, right?
Right, exactly. And so that's probably where the Cherokee men are much larger. But the other thing we may have inherited from the mound builders is the dolichocephalic skull, because it's, in the 1930s, there was a Dr. Kelly that came down from Harvard and took a look at Cherokee burials and found out that an ocean of different native peoples surrounded the Appalachians. It's the only place in the world where people with dolichocephalic skulls are buried other than in coastal areas all over the world, people known as Phoenicians. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you know, our stories is that we came here in boats, we had an outlet to the sea, it was the last thing that we sold as far as a land session. It was, you know, between Columbia, South Carolina, and the coast. And, but was there was always these traditions about the, how we came here in boats. But anyway, after we fought with the mound builders, we continued moving east and encountered, guess who, the Iroquois. Well, we had a particularly nasty war with them, and but we agreed, according to the Kitua elders, to stop that war by stopping speaking our language, whatever it was, and beginning to speak their language.
Interesting.
So that's where they think that we're... that we're Iroquoian, but we're not.
Oh, I see.
See?
Just the language, the language affiliation.
Right, 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 exactly. And actually, Cherokee language, I mean, we've got Iroquoian words, we've got Algonquin words, we've got, you know, but there was a delegation that went down and met with a Don Enrique about 5 years ago, and was a Mayan elder, and he was asked, well, you know, who are the Cherokee to the Mayans? And he said, we're the same people. And these mixed blood Cherokees looked at him and said, really? And he says, yeah. He says, I could even send you to a city in Egypt where you could prove it to yourself if you're interested. Indicating that we all come over here from Egypt.
Well, I think that, you know, the dispersion seems to come from Atlantis. Now, I don't know. I know that the... Have you done any research into the X lineage?
Oh, the chromosomal... Go ahead.
Well, that's the mtDNA, you know, the genetic...
Yeah, the DNA, right. Go ahead.
Genetic, and they came up with the Native Americans all the way down, from North America all the way down, South America, were four basic groups.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed at first, and of course the Bering Strait people, were, you know, jumped on it, that... You know, they all came from Asia and so on. But the more research they did and they refined it, they found that, like you just said, there were people that came from Southeast Asia and they, people that came by boat.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't all come across the land bridge from Siberia.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty recent. That hasn't been written about too much yet. It's not in textbooks and so on, but it's been proven. Now, they came over the fifth group, and that was just A, B, C, D. With,
mm-hmm.
You know, they came up with the fifth group, X haplogroup. Now, that's the interesting one, because the Iroquois, 25% of the Iroquois were X haplogroup, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, right.
And that's just the genetic classification. It's a family. It's a lineage.
They say according
to... tribes didn't have it.
Do you know which bunch, you know, which nation of the Iroquois, because there's six nations.
Oh, it was...
The Cherokee and the Mohawk are more closely related, and a lot of people don't know that the Dakota and the Cherokee are familial.
There were Great Lakes, kind of in the Great Lakes area.
Okay.
And in the mound, they took a mound builder sample.
Okay.
Of an ancient sample.
Right? So at this point,
it turned out to be X as well. Now, X is only found in that group, in the Navajo, like you just said, there was some movement to the southwest in the Navajo. And in the Yakima. None of the other tribes have this X group, and none of the tribes south of the United States have it. It's only in North America, in those tribes. The rest of the Americas doesn't have it at all. But it's found in the Berbers, the Basques, at about 10% in the Basques and 25% in the Berbers in the Atlas Mountains.
Okay.
Share that same mtDNA.
So that's just your Atlantis move, or...
Sorry,
as our guest Clifford Alford, who's a Asagat Sidha chief, he's Sargon and Sargon, the old islands that we came from, and he said the Mayans are actually a group of missionaries that came from Mu. They were sent here as missionaries.
Now the Chinese and the Orientals in general take Mu, that continent, seriously.
Yeah.
Whereas ours, the scientists scoff at it.
Yeah.
Now, the more genetic, what I'm finding in my research, where my research has gone deeper and deeper, is into the genetics, because the genetics, you find that they tend to support Atlantis, the history that people tell, and that scientists, you know, not what scientists are just making up as they go along, coming out of there and not listening to people, not going around asking tribes their own history, groups of people their own history. And the genetics, I tell you, in North America, though, it's pretty complicated.
Really interesting, isn't it?
It's pretty complicated. And when you look at that, and of course we know, I mean, these continents, hey, they thrived, they flourished, and they collapsed. So I guess we're looking at now, where are we globally? And say, I don't see the human race at this point in time. We have 6 billion people spread out in every possible niche, right? They were all over the planet. All the earthquakes and volcanoes and tsunamis are not going to get rid of the human race.
Mm-mm.
And I don't think they're supposed to, right? There's always supposed to be a remnant.
Yeah.
But they're certainly supposed to change us.
Well, I think they were talking about the last really almost extinction-level event was the explosion of a volcano in Southeast Asia somewhere. And they figured out from, well, what it was is a climatologist got together with a glaciologist, and they started comparing notes. And one guy was looking at ice core samples, and the other was looking at other, you know, records. And they both figured out about 60,000 years ago that it was a DNA specialist, and the climatologist is what it was. They both knew that about 60,000 years ago there was a bottleneck. And when they compared notes, they figured out that it was because of this tremendous volcanic event that it just shrouded the earth with so much clouds that nothing grew for quite a long time. And the DNA people know that it was about 60,000 years ago that an event happened where, I think they said the figure was less than 50,000 people on Earth, and going down from a much larger group of people. There was a very small group of people, and we.
Well, there's only two, and I'm glad you brought that point up, because there's two scenarios where we could have, I mean, a total disaster, and one is a major volcano, a super volcano like that, or a series, and it happened even in the early 1800s. There were three major volcanic eruptions, and it changed the weather for about 3 years, and it caused what happened very quickly. There were crops shortages,
yep.
And then there were food embargoes, and then people were rioting in the streets. It's totally documented.
Well, the Hopi, the Mormons originally started storing for 7 years, because the Hopi did, and then they went to 3.5 years, then they went to 2, and President of the Mormon Church at the turn of the 20th century said, well, the Latter-day Saints do half right, they'll probably squeak through. So indicating that something's going to happen, we're not going to be able to have seed time and harvest for probably a couple of years.
Well, now getting back to this natural disasters, you know, this the most disturbing thing to me is this rise in volcanic eruption. Because what you said, what happens is, you know, we saw it with Pinatubo. It changed the weather.
Uh-huh.
We experienced that. That was
these ice ages, too.
It's only 14 years ago, right, that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just pushes all that particulate matter that quickly gets spread around the earth, and then it blocks out, it reflects back some of the sunlight. It just wouldn't take, if we start getting eruptions, and what concerned me this fall was a lot of volcanoes became active.
Mm-hmm.
I counted them, 14 of them were active all at once, and I thought, if this is what we're in for, then the weather is going to change very rapidly.
Hey, when Mount St. Helens went off, the week it went off, there was a lady that called into the Coast to Coast show, and she said she was from Hot Springs, Arkansas, living in California, and she had a good friend that worked for the National Park Service. And she says her friend told her, hey, it's a big secret, but, you know, they're calling in a bunch of scientists because nobody can figure out why the temperature of the hot springs was rising so quickly all of a sudden. And of course, you know, all the hot springs are all commercial, and everybody's worried about losing their livelihood, but this was going on at the same time when all the magma was moving around on the West Coast. So apparently, there's a connection.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated and freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Well, how do we get... I have a tremendous amount of data now that links the increase in the sunspot cycle, the intensity of the sun, to increase in natural disasters. This is all syncing up together with the Mayan prophecy. But how do I get it to... It's only scientists. So, I mean, they're the gatekeepers, right, in our system right now. To be able to say, look, this is not a one-time thing. This is going to continue at least the next 7 years now. And I haven't found a way to do that yet because it seems like there's different communities, like the alternative researchers, spiritually oriented people, Native Americans are in different communities, and then there's this mainstream community that ignores and belittles everyone else.
Yeah.
You know, and they're running the show, and they're missing everything.
Right. Well, and everybody's really kind of fixated on 2012. Well, you know, Hunbach's men, you know, when he came on and did his interview a few months ago, you know, what I heard that wasn't recorded, you know, really kind of told the story. And basically, I mean, he didn't mention names, and I don't have to mention names, but the first people that came out and started talking about 2012, I mean, it looks right now like, hey, you know, they were a little bit trying to scare people and trying to sell books. You know, basically what he said was, look, you know, I can read over 1,000 of these glyphs. The guys that wrote the most popular original books on the subject read maybe 30. You know, why is it that because they got doctor in front of their name or PhD behind it, that they want to listen to those guys more than they want to listen to me? I'm a Mayan daykeeper, and which is the equivalent of a Mayan king, and but they don't want to listen to me, you know. And there's some other information. Don Jaime Perez has done. He was one of our guests, and he'll be on sometime soon. He's done translation work for Hunbach's men. But let me just read a brief thing in here. Maybe you can make some connections. He's in his book, I'm reading from Traditional Ceremonial Pathways, A Pilgrim's Journey by Jaime O. Perez. Page 30, he says, the last time the new fire burned on Star Hill was 1492. The next cycle begins in 2012. This is also so consistent with the Mayan Kaltun calendar that begins a new cycle in 2012. Most Mesoamerican group calendars coincide on that year. According to traditional prophecy, the old sun sets at solstice December 20, 2012, and the new age begins with the lighting of the new fire at equinox March 20 of 2013.
Okay, but let's stop there, okay? Because I'm aware of all those things. Here's what I haven't heard those people saying.
Let me read on for another minute, and maybe we'll connect. I was just kind of laying the... There's another maybe minute's reading here. Traditional elder guardians of Star Hill proclaimed the period of equinox 2012 through solstice 2010 as a decade of preparation. Don Armando was called to lead the procession of the pilgrims to light the new fire to initiate the preparation. It was also important to know that the 500-year prophecy of Kuatawamak issued in 1527. The year 2027 completes the 500th year of that edict. So once the shift to the new calendar cycle comes in 2013, there will be a period of 14 years that will see the rise of new Mesoamerican integration that will fully implant the practice of four directions, or what is understood to be the overcoming of tribal and race consciousness. So 2012, they're saying, is just, it's not the thing to be afraid of. It's the beginning of something new.
Yes.
And an integration of everybody.
Right. But here's the thing. The Mayan, I feel like I'm getting my information directly. Directly. I don't care about any races or any traditions or anything in the end, because we're all connected to the Creator.
Exactly. And
we
are
all connected. I listen to everybody.
Right. What is the Bible says, the letter of the law killeth, the spirit of the law giveth life. So anything that's written down in stone, it needs to be superseded by what information you can get from Creator. Everybody needs to know that.
Part of what I've been given, it's not what I'm making up, but what I've been given is, and I also didn't jump in with people with this alarmist thing, and that's part of the tricky thing about this,
mm-hmm.
is to come with accurate information and tell people, look, I am, and I'm surprised at those people, and I don't know, maybe it just, I know that they know, but they're not giving it out, that they're not linking. I had a discussion with John Major Jenkins. I'll mention some names, because he's been, you know, the alignment issue. Yeah, but in the meantime on Earth, we're all living day to day, and a lot of stuff is going on. And we're having natural disasters, and people want to understand what's happening. And where does all this fit in? And they're going to continue happening. It fits in when they talk about the change of the sun. I think what the sun is doing, it is going through a change. It's blowing up. It's like it hit an extreme in the last 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
That energy now is being reflected in the Earth, and we're experiencing it.
Yep.
In 20, we go through this 7-year phase now of, you know, kind of the final stage of the Earth restructuring and changing.
Is this the 7-year time of Jacob's trouble the Bible talks about? The tribulation period?
I think that's exactly what we're in. We are in the tribulation period. And I don't, those people declined, they want to talk about an alignment. An alignment, yes. It's true, and 2012 comes, but we got to get there, and also reach people in the process now to show them this has been prophesied, this has been written for a long time, this is part of the cycle of life. It's not just chaos. The Creator does not work through chaos.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like chaos to us on our level, to some people, but it's a restructuring. It's gonna recharge everything, and like I agree with that prophecy, but I'm still surprised by what they leave out, and I know that they know.
Well, what you know after St. Helens, St. Helens laid quite a bit of ash out, and you know to everybody's surprise, the next summer they grew a lot of apples in Washington. They grew some big apples.
Absolutely.
In Washington.
That's the apple-growing state.
So that's how, you know, we have depleted soils on the planet. Nothing is going to help it out more than a bunch of volcanic eruptions that'll lay out a nice ash so we can have, you know, we've depleted this topsoil. And there's going to be pockets of people that are going to be led to certain places where they, you know, where you know, things will be mitigated. But you know, what you're pounding on and what I'm pounding on and what Red Elk and Ghost Wolf are pounding on is you got to get right with Creator and learn how to, well, as Jesus would say, my sheep know my voice, okay? We need to stop having the mindset that the Hebrews had. No, Moses, we don't want to go up that mountain like you just invited us. We want you to go up the mountain. Right. And that began the whole thing with priests. We don't need, we can need to be our own priests, our own prophets. You know, when the people came to Moses and were complaining, hey, there's these jerks going through, and they're prophesying, and he said, so what? I would that we would all be prophets.
I think the point you're making there is really important, because I think that that is where the Western European mindset totally misunderstood Native Americans.
Well, they
didn't have an organized, structured church, you know, in that kind of way, so they didn't see the spiritual understanding.
Right. Well, they threw the baby out with the bathwater when they killed the Gnostics off, mostly.
You know, so we're kind of coming around now, I think, where at least some Christians are realizing, you know, this isn't about church. This is not about church and structure and hierarchies. This is direct contact, and we better be open to hearing anybody, because you don't know who the Creator is speaking to. You don't know. And so if you're not paying attention, things just blow right by you.
Right.
And that's why I really listen to everybody, and there's just a different way that the Mayas seem to have. But here's the thing, too. Here's part of what the point I want to make is that this sun, the fourth sun, is called the sun of motion. And the Mayan prophecy clearly states that it ends in earthquakes.
Yeah.
That's part of the prophecy. So here we are, and these people are not talking about, they're talking about an alignment, a grand alignment, you know, of the earth with the cosmic center, or however you want to term
black
it,
road.
Which is pretty abstract to most people. And you're, you know, whereas an earthquake and the other things that are actually happening, they're very real. And I got a feeling it's a sort of a political stance that they don't want to be the messengers of bad news.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. Already had enough. But the 500 year point that you brought up there that he mentioned is just very important, because, you know, 1527. Was really officially when the last pyramid civilization was destroyed.
That's right.
That was the end of the Aztec Empire. That was also the year, and it's very interesting, I mean, the correlation is here. They're also not mentioning the transit of Venus. 1527 was, yep. 1526 was the last year of the transit. So 2012, that's the next transit. So when he, see, it's, they're going through the cycle, but they're not giving you all the information. I'm not sure why.
Well, they'll tell you, you know, hey, there's going to be people dying. I mean, a lot of people die, and at this point, you wonder why all the resurgence in the last 20 years or so about near-death experiences. I had always looked at it as, hey, I think they're getting ready to usher a lot of people into the spirit world suddenly. You know, this was a new phenomenon where you got, you know, who was the first big one that I just can't remember, having my mind meltdown here. Saved by the Light and Embraced by the Light. But the one lady that had her big experience and had the first big book on, she's half Lakota. And then Daniel Brinkley, you know, But, you know, it was kind of a new phenomenon. It got everybody excited, and that, you know, what does it mean? Well, my first wife and I always thought, hey, it sounds like they're getting ready to usher a lot of people quickly into the spirit world, and they're just kind of, it's a familiarization tour of what to expect.
And at least face death, you have to face, you know, the inevitability of the life cycle, and that it's also uncertain for each one of us.
Right.
Give this your best shot while you're here, you know.
Right.
What I'm trying to do is to try to just put some clarification on this, and also that there's a real science. We don't understand even the full scope of the science, but sunspots are real. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You brought up the point earlier. You know, scientists every day, in fact, you can go on, just do a word search, solar activity, and you'll go on to NOAA, and they have a solar report every day.
Uh-huh.
And they have to, because when we get solar flares, it totally disrupts telecommunications,
yeah.
satellites. So that solar energy we're talking about is not, you know, it's very powerful. And our civilization now is electromagnetic. I mean,
yeah.
we don't know what's going to happen in this next solar cycle. And you even, when we first started talking this evening, you were talking about, you know, things shutting down. That's one of been my concern with this next Venus transit, that before we're going to have a weather change. It's not in the direction scientists are talking about. It's going to be cooler. Human temperaments are going to cool down, and we are going to work together much more.
Mm.
All races are going to.
That goes along with what I was told. Oh, geez, we're probably going back to about 90. I was told it's going to get colder.
Yes.
So my wife and I, we started looking at. Well, we didn't know why, so we started looking at before we have children, and we started looking for deals, and we decided, well, since we don't know how many kids we're going to have. Oh, so we just thought, well, the kids go through clothes pretty quick. So we found a deal. Somebody was closing out moon boots. So, hey, we bought one of every size. They were only a couple of bucks. But, you know, if it's going to get cold. And then we bought, each of us bought a pair of Mickey Mouse boots, which is the rubber U.S. Extreme cold weather. You know, the black ones are for cold, wet, and the white ones are for cold and dry. Best you can get. We bought N3B snorkel parkas to make sure we stay warm. And Native Prophecy Council, we got 300 of us, and we were talking about, well, what would we wear in a situation like this? And somebody said, well, you know, maybe because they're cheap or they're ubiquitous, the sweats would be nice. And I said, well, I said, you might want to think about battle dress uniforms. Stay away from the military colors. I said, but you can get them in white and slate and, you know, in blue. And
right.
Plus, they got triple thicknesses in the rear end, and they're really built to last, you know.
That's a good idea, checking out military
service. Oh, yeah. And they're usually cheap, too, because there's so many of them around, and they're built to last. And but people need to start thinking about, I mean, that's only a stopgap.
Well, but we're hearing this. See, you were talking, and... But this is a small group that's sharing this information, right?
Yeah.
The mass media and the mainstream science is just blasting constantly. Global warming forever, global
yeah.
warming.
Yeah.
Well, you may be preparing for the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing, even from here on, colder winters,
yeah.
cooler, wetter summers. Wasn't this past summer, mostly all over the country, it was a little bit cool. We had no wildfires in the West as we've been having for years now. There weren't any major fires in the West. Temperatures were cooler.
Well, what did the average Neanderthal family wear for
skin?
What kind of skin?
Yeah, I bet you
goat.
Goat.
Huh? Goat. Remember the National Geographic special about Ötzi, the Iceman that they found?
Oh, yeah.
Everything he had on him was goat. Well... I've got a friend, you know, you talk about getting information, you know, from Creator, and he just said, you know, Lord, I'm so tired of organized religion, and, you know, what could I do to help you build the kingdom? Now, here's a guy that was at that time he was a doctoral fellow in education. He had done all of his coursework except for his dissertation, and he was told, get a goat. And he went back and said, is there a second choice, Lord? Lord came back and said, get a goat. He says, okay. He said, he didn't know anything about goats. He says, if you'll bless me, I'll have the finest herd of goats in the U.S. within 5 years. He did it in 4. And along the way, he found out that the only kind of milk sanctioned for humans is goat milk. The fat globules are smaller, and there's no problems with the lactose intolerance.
They give a lot of milk, too.
I lived
in Hawaii, and we had goats, and they gave a lot of milk.
Well, if you saw that, I saw that movie Cold Mountain recently, and it was about that guy that decided to, he said, you know, screw this war, I'm going home if I gotta get shot doing it.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And along the way, he was protected by a goat herd, a woman. And she said, a goat will provide you with everything you need. It will provide you with companionship. It will feed you. It's meat. It's milk. And it will clothe you. And these are, the goat is what the ancient people in the Bible used. They had herds of goats and sheep. And now we know that the ancient people in Europe, that's what they use, you know, goats. It's the best thing there was. It's good for you. I mean, they know that goat meat, I think they call it a negative calorie food. It's a red meat, but it's like basmati rice. It takes a little bit more calories to burn it, so you don't tend to get as fat.
I don't know where you get that. I guess you have to raise your own for that.
Something like that. But he ended up raising the finest goats. He was offered a blank check by a group of Japanese investors and wouldn't take it because he knew that that bloodline of his goats, and they're all Nubians, and they are the absolute most beautiful goats that you've ever seen in your life. And, you know, he just keeps a small stock of goats.
So are you in Missouri?
Yes, and miniature cattle because he knows that the miniature Hereford are one of the ancient breeds. And so he has an honorary doctorate in miniature cattle breed.
So he senses something.
Oh, sure.
Something as well.
He spent 17 years. He lived up in Independence, Missouri, and it spent 17 years trying to figure out where to go. So he studied the climate charts. He came up with two places. Down here in southern, south central Missouri, and the other place was up around the Black Hills, climate-wise. And he said he almost kind of, you know, wishes he went to the Black Hills because it's cooler in the summer and there's not ticks.
But I'm
telling him, I said, Dick, it's going to get cooler here.
Well, it is. You're right, it is.
It's getting cooler. I mean, the climate maps, between 1960 and now, you can see, you know, the zone maps that they show you in gardening catalogs. Well, the zone that was to the north of us in 1960 has moved down 150 miles in 40 years.
Where I'm at, oh. I'm on the border in southern Arizona, and we talked earlier off the phone, and I just wanted to mention briefly or bring up the point, maybe we could talk about it briefly, that... you know, I've been working with a couple of tribes here.
Mm-hmm.
One large reservation. I mean, they have a good chunk of the southern desert. And the diabetes epidemic and the obesity epidemics, which are just caused by civilization. I mean, these people, even a generation ago, the tribes, there was no term for diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one tribe probably has 50%. The Hana Odom have about 80%. And there are basically no more elders.
Yeah.
I mean, the average lifespan is 59.
Jeez.
It's a sad situation, but people are becoming, what I'm finding, and we're doing light therapy there, what I'm finding is that people are becoming aware that this all has to do with civilization, the wrong diet, that the very, and they're finding that the foods that their ancestors ate there, which were tepary beans, which grow naturally in the desert, they're high in protein.
Mm-hmm.
And they're low in starch. They have very little starch in their diet. And the cactus, the prickly pear cactus especially, counteracts diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People are drinking that. It's going to be a generational process
mm-hmm.
to work through this to where they really get a grip on it. And but, you know, everybody's got to stay away from, you know, so many carbs,
yep.
starchy foods.
Navajos have the same problem. I think they've got 10 or 15% of their people on dialysis and about 40% of the tribe's diabetic.
It's a sad situation.
It is.
It really is. You know, and like I said, I'm working with, talking with people up there, have been for a couple of months now.
Well, most Native people are type O, I understand.
That's right.
And some years ago, Dr. Dodamo came out with a book called Eat Right for Your Type.
Right, I'm familiar with that.
And he basically said there's three kinds of foods for each blood type. Some are good, some are neutral, some are bad. And the ones that are bad for you mimic allergies. Now, I have type B blood, which originated on the Tibetan Plateau. And it's also pretty common among the Khazarian Jews. And it came down to my dad because my mom was O. My dad was AB negative, I'm B negative, and
that's a pretty rare blood type.
It is, it's pretty rare. And but it's pretty common among the Hasidic Jews. And he tells a story of one very prominent Hasidic Jewish elder that was just near to death. And he said he took a look at his diet, and they didn't expect the guy to live, and he was only about 60. And he said, their problem was is they were eating a lot of chicken and chicken fat, and they were, you know, he said anciently the Khazarian Jews when they had a feast they would have chicken or. But he says they're eating it about every day, either chicken or chicken fat, or because Jewish people nowadays make a lot of things with chicken fat. And so he said, you know, just stay away from that. He says you don't get away from it totally. You know, you just eat a lot less of it than you're eating. He says, well, the guy was almost in and out of a coma, but within 2 weeks, he had the guy not only up on his feet, but he had more energy than he had in a lot of years. And after I read this book, I thought to myself, my gosh, everything that book says that I shouldn't eat is what my doctor told me I was allergic to when I was 12. Peas, beans, nuts, tomatoes, cottonseed oil, all these things, Dodamo said, people who have a type B, he says that it glutenizes the blood. He says if you put chicken or peas, beans, nuts, whatever in type B blood, it will make it glue together, and he says it mimics an allergy. And so, because when I was a kid, my allergies were so bad, at one point, every lymph node in my body swelled up to double size, and I was literally standing in my ear, and they took me to a hospital. So there is something to this thing. But people that have my blood type should be eating fish and vegetables, and I wasn't raised on fish and vegetables because that's the Northern European diet. Fish, vegetables, and dairy, or the Japanese. Because, see, the Japanese have A, B, and B, and O also.
Right.
And, of course, they've got some other theories about blood types. They really feel that their upper-level managers should have A, B, and their middle-level.
They're big on blood types.
Yeah, you know, they're
very big on it.
But anyway, type O people... Hamburger, you know, red meat is medicine to them.
That's right.
And
but even the Paleolithic diet, if you go back to that, and that's what all of us really had that for thousands of generations, it was lean meat and leaves.
Lean meat, deer meat. So we've killed a deer. We've got 100 pounds of deer meat in the freezer right now.
That's right. That's what you
and it
eat.
Tastes great. As long as you kill it and you kill it right, it bleeds out fast, it's better than beef and leaner. And
since that's what our genetics are really programmed to handle, of course, if we're eating potato chips, you know, on top of cakes and pies and cookies and then, you know, supersized load of fries and Coke and stuff, you're going to just blow your sugar control system out.
I have nearly killed myself doing exactly that. I weigh 450 pounds.
You did?
Mm-hmm. I'm not diabetic, and I don't have serious heart problems now, but I have just now gotten to a point where I have finally figured out. My first wife, she passed away. She said, you're going to find a natural way to lose weight someday, and you will lose weight, and you will live. At that point, it was questionable, because I also had sleep apnea so bad I had 100 episodes a night, which is a lot. And I'm still alive. I kind of stabilized at 450 pounds. But here, 2-3 months ago, we were in a health food store. I gave it up losing weight because I knew that dieting would kill me. I knew that I needed a way to find what it was that Joanne was driving at. And it's really interesting here now because she told me, she says, I will show up in your dreams, you know, when you need me. And so I'll get back around to that in a minute. Well, about 3 months ago, we were in a health food store in West Plains. And right in the front of the store, there was a product called WellBetX, WellBetX. And it was supposed to help people that were diabetic. And my wife begged me to buy it, and I kind of went, oh, well, here we go, because we tried a lot of things for her, and generally she'll try something for 2-3 months and hit a wall, she won't get any effect from it. Well, she years ago had tried the macrobiotic diet and loved it, but you got to live in a city and it's very expensive. Well, she got on WellBetX, which is specifically formulated to help people with the glucose intolerance, and diabetics have this problem, and so do fat people. And she was on it for 2 weeks, 2 meals a day. She said she never felt energy. And her blood sugar immediately stabilized. Her blood sugar hadn't been below 200, 250 in years. It went right down to 100, kept it fine. She always felt like she was full. You know, plus they have a weight loss program that uses, both of these things use something called konjac root. Konjac root's a dietary fiber that far surpasses any dietary fiber that's used. Of course, they use stevia and a lot of these other really good things, but I'm getting on it too. And I'm going to lose, this is my year for losing weight, because Creator told me because I asked him after he told me back in March of 98, in August, you know, he came to me after he told me 2005 was the year, you know, and the following August, he comes to me and says, you have 7 years, which pissed me off. And so I went back and said, okay, I said, you've been telling me stuff since 1983. You told me my wife is going to die during the dark of the moon. She did 13 years later. You've been telling me all this stuff. I want to know who you are. Because I wanted to know the source of all this stuff. You know, naturally, people that are, you know, raised Christians, they always wonder, well, who's talking to me? Well, it took 2 weeks, but this voice came back and said, I am. I am. So when I woke up, I went, oh, I know who you are. You're that God of the Old Testament guy, you know. So I was okay with it. But he said, well, you got 7 years. Well, that 7 years is up in August. And I'll tell you what, I'm afraid to... I got to do something, or I'm going to die, and that's what I'm going to do.
Well, get on it, and
we're on it.
You can do it.
Yeah, 2 days. It's on its way, and our church here helped us out, so we can get on it and stay on it.
I wish you had access to this. I think light therapy would help you and your wife. I've seen amazing results.
Well, Dick's a firm. You know, our friend Dick. We talk about the Goat Man. He's a firm believer in. He's a dowser and a firm believer in color therapy and light therapy and. Got some books on it, and
I mean, I've just seen a guy who just went through
this
a major stroke.
It's not color therapy; it's light therapy, huh?
Light. This is pulsed light.
Pulse
LED
light.
Light, though.
Oh yeah.
It's pulsed at specific frequencies, and I've seen people who are in chronic pain be free from pain. I mean, chronic for years, who have no, you know, tendons, ligaments in their knees, who can hardly stand up, who are walking pain free.